Welcome to the NewsHour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is John Cozy. Delighted to have John back. He's a retired philosophy and logic professor. He's now blogging on social, political, and economic issues. He taught for 20 years. He's been a writer for another 20. His articles are terrific. That's how I first found John and read a couple of his articles and said, I just have to get this man on the program so we can talk about them. You can find them all at jcozy, K-O-Z-Y, .com, and johncozy.mindsay, M-I-N-D-S-A-Y, mindsay.com. You can get them all there. You can find them on Global Research. And I urge listeners to read John's articles, and we're going to talk about one of them today. Let me just mention one thing first. Republic had a technical glitch yesterday. They were literally down for an hour or two or three or whatever. Shook me when I heard about it. I wondered whether I was talking to the wall. I was not. But a couple of my listeners alerted me that they had trouble accessing the program live. I believe it did go on, but anybody who missed it, the program is archived. It is up, and anybody can access yesterday's program and all my other archives through Republic on their site. Please do it. Had a wonderful program yesterday on Haiti with two terrific human rights lawyers. I think you want to hear that because you'll find out some information on some of the things really going on, not the rubbish that you get on CNN and the rest of them. Anyway, John, I welcome you to the program. We want to talk about your article, Blunder and Plunder, and you quote Edmund Burke saying, those who don't know history are destined to repeat it. And, of course, George Santayana said it a little bit later than Burke did. Different words, same meaning. Indeed, I don't know. I have to think our people know history, John, but as you also say, they didn't learn a damn thing from it. Welcome, John.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Yeah, we keep repeating the same things over and over again. One of my favorite quotes about insanity, John, is a good definition of it is people who keep doing the same thing. Insanity is doing the same things over again and expecting a different result.
Yeah, that's Einstein, wasn't it?
Was it Einstein? To God, don't remember, but I've used that quote. I haven't used it in a while, but I've used it several times in the past.
Yeah.
We keep doing the same things over again, like fighting all these crazy wars. We haven't won one since World War II. Forgetting about Grenada, the Chicago, a contingent of the Chicago police force could have handled that one.
Well, that was the war against no army.
That was the war against no army, that's right, against a country that was minding its own business without doing anything until one day the Marines showed up.
Yeah. I'll tell you, when I first started teaching in the university, I quickly learned that just presenting material and discussing issues wasn't sufficient, that every class where an issue was discussed had to end with some sort of conclusion. That is, the students had to be told, what they learned that day. And I used that throughout all of my teaching career, and I still think it's an important thing to do. It sounds like we're getting commercial.
Yeah, we got that music, meaning the music spells out commercial. Let's take it. Hold
on, okay.
John, and pick right up on that when we come back.
Okay.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Yes, Stephen. What I was saying is that I learned that having a discussion of an issue that didn't lead to a conclusion was use, really a useless activity. You talk a lot, but nobody learns anything from the talk. And I noticed that's a prevalent feature of American and perhaps cultures, other cultures too. Anyone who watches the Sunday shows like Face the Nation or Meet the Press or any of those, if you're observant, you'll discover that when the show is over, there's nothing you can write down that you said you learned. There's no point made, no conclusion ever drawn. It's just a lot of hot air taking up your time.
You can say that about everything on so-called television news, John.
Yeah, that's true. And of course, it's really hypocrisy to talk about that as news or information conveyance. If you don't convey a point, you don't convey anything. And you know, a number of years ago, I don't know, two or three, four, somewhere out on my website, I posted an article saying, do historians contribute to the decline of nations? And I think that they do, for the most part, for the very same reason. If you look at a catalog from some bookseller, for instance, you'll see enormous numbers of books about big national events, especially wars. But no one ever draws any conclusions from those books. They tell you all about what happened there and what happened here and so on, so on, so on, so, but you know, there's no result, and that by doing that, historians give people the impression that these big events are what are important, but they're not what are important. What are important are the things that are overlooked, like the consequences of the big events. Nobody writes about, you know, what the Japanese went through after the two bombings, atomic bombings of Japan. Nobody writes about those people, but they write about the bombings. Likewise, even in Haiti, what's going on today is the big push, all sorts of contributions being made, all sorts of attempts made to save people. But a month or two from now, the Haitian people will be forgotten, and nobody will write about their plight. And that's the kind of thing that has always bothered me about culture in the modern world.
Well, I agree with you 100%, John. There can be some terrible things going on. Haiti is very important to me right now. I just put out my sixth article since the January 12th quake on Haiti. This one was on child slavery in Haiti, major problem, certainly before the earthquake. And, I mean, going back decades, generations, who knows. But now it's incredibly much greater problem because so many people are living on the street, and the street is where they're most vulnerable, and kids separating from their parents. We had that story that made the news about these Baptists from Idaho that picked up 33 kids. I wrote about them in my article out today. There's no question in my mind that these people were up to no good. They wanted to take these kids. A lot of them had parents still living. They were falsely claimed to be orphans, and the idea was to get them out of Haiti. The easy way is get them into the Dominican Republic right next door and then put them up for adoption and make a buck out of getting people who want to adopt a young child to pay good money for it. I mean, just horrible stuff. And you're right. Even all the reporting on all the major issues, John, the media presents it from our point of view, from a Western point of view, and never from a people's point of view. And one more comment, and I'll let you jump back in on this. The great historian, a people's historian who just died, Howard Zinn, I wrote about him too. And he was the exception. He wrote his history from the point of view of ordinary people and explained the consequences for them and what they went through. But for every Howard Zinn, there are legions of people who do exactly the opposite. And so the kids never learn anything. And the point that Zinn made was, the way they teach history in schools is including, and he said it before, including college and grad school up to the highest level, is the idea is to turn people into good citizens, not to explain what the heck is really going on in context and the reasons why and who benefits and who loses.
I live in Texas, and in Texas, the school children are required to study what's called Texas history. And they make a big deal out of what are known as our Texas heroes, okay? But nobody ever points out that those Texas heroes were scoundrels. I mean, they were scoundrels of ill repute that is just abominable. But the kids never learn that. I pointed out that, you know, when they attempted to go to Mexico and lied about wanting to become Mexican citizens and converting to Catholicism and all of that, their intention all along was to break away from Mexico and form a slave state. And not only that, when they did manage to do that, then they joined the Union, and in a few years they withdrew. They really were scoundrels, but that's never taught in the history classes that Texas students learn, and it's an abominable thing.
It really is.
Outrageous,
and of course Texas right there on the Mexican border, the Mexican War about 1846. Jesus, we stole half of the country.
That's right.
You know, we created a pretext like there's some reason why we have to go in there to do something. I mean, same thing we do all the time when we want to start a war. We stole half their country. And the only reason we didn't take it all was because there were too many in the southern part that's now Mexico that were Spanish-speaking people of the types that we didn't want. So we took what we wanted and we left the rest. Can I read Zinn's quote about Andrew Jackson?
Oh,
that,
sure.
That great American?
Sure.
He says, quote, "If you look through high school textbooks and elementary textbooks, I'm sure college textbooks too, in American history, you will find Jackson the frontiersman, soldier, Democrat, man of the people, not Jackson the slave owner, land speculator, executioner of dissident soldiers, exterminator of Indians, the real Jackson."
Yeah, worse than that is that, you know, that he turned the federal government into a workplace for his friends and scoundrels. So, you know, I mean, that talk about corruption in government, it began very early, and he was one of the main corruptors, no question about it.
Oh, I have no doubt. He did one good thing, though. He did one good thing that only he and Lincoln did it, John. He absolutely despised the Bank of the United States, which was the closest thing in those days to a Federal Reserve. And he refused to renew their charter, and he got away with it. When Lincoln decided he didn't want to do business with the bankers and printed greenbacks interest-free to the government, well, he ended up not being able to run for a second term. Let's put it that way. But Jackson came out standing on his feet, so I think that's quite amazing. Maybe the bankers weren't quite so strong in those days.
Well, not only that, but there was a lot. There was a lot of dislike of bankers in the colonial world. I mean, Jefferson disliked them too, and you know, it's not that that was a pretty prevalent attitude among many important people in that time.
Oh, indeed. So that's very true. And we did have a very prosperous time in this country before we decided to let the Bank of England have more say. And the fact that they did, and they were turning the economy into a shambles because they wanted to extract their pound of flesh. That's the real cause of the so-called Revolutionary War. The idea of a tea party or a tax on tea, that had nothing to do with it. England wanted to benefit at the expense of the colony here, just like all their other colonies. That's what a colonial power does.
That's right. That's what colonialism is, and that's why, you know, that was one of the reasons I wrote the article that we're supposed to be discussing. Blunder and plunder. I mean, we people have blundered into colonial wars, creating empires, only to plunder the territories that we were colonizing, and people, you know, to get back to historians, historians quite often make this out to be, a great accomplishment. I mean, what was it, the British Empire that on which the sun never set? You know, that's supposed to be a great Western accomplishment. But in fact, it not only plundered India and other colonies, or African colonies, but it weakened England itself. I mean, the cost of this plunder was greater than the wealth gathered. And, empire leads to its own collapse. And I think that is the point I was trying to make. And now the United States seems to be pursuing the same policy.
John,
we're gonna colonize the whole world, not just some countries here and there.
I think you made a profound point in that article. That's the highlight of that article for me, John. That they can get away with this for so long, and Britain certainly did it for a good amount of time, controlling 75% of the world and extracting the wealth from these countries for itself. And look at where it ended up. It ended up a shell. Actually bankrupt twice, once after World War One and the second time after World War Two. And, I mean, they just got knocked off their perch for what they did. And I think you'll agree, John, that's exactly where the United States is heading. We will be knocked off our perch, too.
Yeah.
One more break, and then we'll get back to your article.
Okay.
This is RBN. The Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. I'm with John Cozy. John, you also talk about what war is really all about, what we never see here. We get the sanitized version, like it's all very neat and clean, and it's only the other side that we do what we do to them, but we don't talk about what's done to us. And of course, it's impossible to capture it all in words. People who go through it can talk about it if they really want to do that. But you talk about the stench of death and the screams of the wounded and the dismembered body parts and the gore and thankfully, I've never been in war. I've been in the Army, but I've never been in war. But war is a pretty ugly piece of business, and it's shocking that we make so light of it. Or never, if we explained it, John, the way it really is, then people simply wouldn't tolerate it.
Yeah, that's one of my big criticisms of what goes on in countries like the United States, and the United States isn't the only one who does it. All the Western powers do it, and perhaps other places too. But you know, there's this old leadership maxim. You know, a good leader never asks anybody to do what he wouldn't do himself.
Mm-hmm.
But our leaders continually ask people, the lowest people, in terms of income and education in society, to do what the leaders would never allow their own children to do. That is, they send them off to get killed.
That's right.
And that bothers me a great deal. I mentioned a historian in that piece, Hansen, who writes about war but has never fought in a war. And he says he was making some sort of point, like war is a result of human nature that'll never cease or whatever, something like that. And I said I suspect that wars would end very quickly if the people who advocated them had to go out and fight them. We only get away with this because the people who advocate the wars are insulated from them.
They sure are. The ones who fought in past ones, John, did it when they were either nobodies or certainly not anywhere near the positions they gained. So you had George Herbert Walker Bush. He was far from a nobody because of his family, but he was in the war. You have people like that, but so many of our top officials were never in a war.
Yeah.
And of course, the current ones, Bush Jr., he ducked under the bed in the National Guard and didn't even show up for that.
Yeah.
And Dick Cheney never did anything. Obama never did anything. And they send these kids over to be slaughtered, the ones who even come back in one piece.
Yeah, and the Congress is full of people like that, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm amazed at what nobody ever points out, okay? Like, Joe Biden's son was called up and had to go over there, okay? Now, we know about troops who have spent years and gone back and had to get sent back into battle for a second and a third time, but Biden's son is already at home.
And even when they put them on active duty and send them any place at all, John, they certainly keep them out of the line of fire. There's
I'm sure that's true. But you know, why doesn't anyone point out that the troops that have gone through so many tours of duty and are still there long after their supposed contracts with the military have expired, are forced to do that, and Biden's kid is home.
Well, yeah. Indeed. So these extended enlistments, the percentage of these young kids who simply don't realize what they're getting themselves into, and they want a job. Given the state of the economy right now, they want a job. So that's a big incentive to join the military. That's a surefire job. They'll take you. And,
yeah.
But they keep sending them back again. You go to Iraq, you go to Afghanistan, go back to Iraq. I mean, as much as they want. The comment I begin to say, John, is even the kids that come back with their limbs and their body in one piece, the extent of post-traumatic stress disorder is enormous.
Yeah.
Enormous. And the medical care that we give these kids when they come back, to a great extent, is pathetic, and the benefits we promised them, we lied. We don't deliver to the great majority of them.
That's
so we
true.
Literally screw these kids one way and another and another and another. What kind of a country is this that does things like this?
Well, but I suspect it's not just this country.
Oh, yeah, it's not.
We have taken on the white man's burden that the English imposed upon the world, and we're committing all of the same mistakes that the British committed, and when the collapse comes, nobody will know why, but the why is obvious. You know, we're going to collapse for the same reason that the British Empire collapsed. We're engaged in absolutely immoral, unjustifiable activities that do not create friends throughout the world.
Well, the one thing we are literally a genius in doing, John, is making enemies. So if people hate us around the world, it's very easy to know why. I mean, you beat them up, you occupy their countries, you kill their family. You expect them to love you in return for that? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness. Another break, John. Short one. We'll come back. We've got a long segment after that. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
You got a paragraph I love listing an awful lot of empires that all met the same fate, and I have to admit you got some in there I never heard of, but I don't want to read them all.
No.
Listeners know the major ones, and I guess the last one that fell was Russia, 1991.
That's true. And it's not as though we don't know this. It's not as though we don't know that empires ultimately fail catastrophically. I mean, it's happened far too many times in history for us to be ignorant of it. And the reason why they failed is obvious, too. You know, empire just begins to cost too much. And when the costs get too high, the people you've colonized and taught to hate you take it out on you. I mean, it's blowback, as they put it. Happens every time. It has happened in the ancient world. It happens, it happened in the medieval world, and it's happening today. So it's not like we don't know, you know, what's going on or what's happening or how to fix it. We don't want to. And we don't want to because the people in charge are the ones who gain materially from these wars, and they don't care about the human sacrifices the other people who fight these wars endure. In another piece I wrote not too long ago, I think, but I don't remember which one it's in, frankly, I proposed that, you know, when the country declares war, we need a conscription for troops to fight it. And the first people called up would be the children and grandchildren of public officials. And the second group of people to be called up would be the children and grandchildren of the wealthiest families in America. And work your way down as you needed troops, but start at the top and work your way down. And I suspect very much that if we had that way of creating an army in time of war, there wouldn't be any war.
Oh, I agree, John. I certainly like your idea of taking the top of the line first, and then working your way down to the lower rungs economically and of the powerful and so on. But of course, they don't do it that way. I don't know what went on in World War II, which was the big one when we had 12 million armed forces involved in that war. I guess even then some people managed to get out of it. I know for one Ronald Reagan was in the service, but he made movies or something like that. He certainly didn't get in the line of fire.
John Wayne was another one, the great, great, great American hero.
He got out of it too.
Yeah, you know. I mean.
And he made so many combat films, propaganda combat films, World War II and afterwards. Yeah, the great American hero is right. Others as well, John.
People. Yeah. Well, what about Schwarzenegger? As I recall, he fought he single-handedly drove the Russians out of Afghanistan in one movie. You know, and I say to myself, look, why are we sending all these troops over there? Why don't we just send Arnold?
I'm not a big movie fan, John, but somebody managed to get me to go to the movie that kind of kickstarted his fame or infamy. I forget the name of it, but it was about weightlifting, and that was his days as a weightlifter. I mean, he was a weightlifter.
Yeah.
He was a bodybuilder. So you would that movie was over 30 years ago, and why I ever went to see it, I'll never know. But there he was with a lot of other people. So of course he's a fairly recent immigrant from what country did he come from? Austria.
Yeah.
So you know, in fairly recent decades, he came over here. So I guess. He didn't have to worry about serving in the military, but you could take all those muscles that he built up, and you take one gunshot through them in the right place, and goodbye, Arnold.
Yeah, well, it's even worse now. You know, the common parlance for muscle builders is muscle head.
I think that's true.
And you know, given the state of California at the present time, I remarked to some friends the other day that. Arnold the Terminator got elected governor and terminated the state.
The state is literally terminating in front of our eyes. It's a shocking situation, and it didn't really start under Arnold. It started long ago.
Oh, yeah, I know, but he's, you know.
Oh, he certainly hasn't helped any. I mean, he's a Republican, and he's the idea of doing it for the few at the top and taking it out of the great majority of people. People in California going through some terrible things. I must say, Joe, I don't know how well Texas is doing. My own state of Illinois is not doing too well either.
Well, Texas is in a unique position. The government has never provided adequate services of any kind. It's a low-budget state with mediocre services and mediocre education. So we never really had a big housing bubble because the people couldn't support a housing bubble in the state of Texas. So, you know, we had less a lesser height to fall, and we didn't fall as much, so that, you know, it looks better here. But things are bad in Texas.
Things are bad. Things are really bad all over. We have an election. We have a primary today in Illinois, John.
That was yesterday, wasn't it?
Well, I'm sorry. It was yesterday. It was yesterday. I'm sorry. It was yesterday, and the interim governor, the man who took this man Blagojevich's place, I can barely pronounce his name. I'm certain I can't spell it. He got drummed out. There's no question that there was a lot of corruption going on. How much involved with him personally, I have no idea, but the corruption is rampant here. And I've written about corruption in Illinois and in Chicago, John. We rank right up there with the best of them when it comes to corruption, city-wise and state-wise. They're going to throw the bums out this time, I imagine.
Corruption of that kind isn't as evident here in Texas, but it exists. As a matter of fact, the visitor's gallery in the State House is euphemistically known as the owner's box, and the people who sit in it are lobbyists. It's not like we don't know. We know.
Oh, we know. We know.
Which brings me to another point I'd like to talk about, isn't in the article that we're discussing, but nevertheless, it's relevant to this discussion. The Republicans are claiming that the recent victories are the result of people's anger at big government. That, you know, people don't trust big government. And I say to myself, well, that's probably true, but the reason that they don't trust big government is the reason that they don't trust any government, because governments are bad. I mean, if we had good government, people would be delighted to have big good government. But to have big bad government is, of course, worse than big small bad small government. So, you know, it's the kind of situation where, again, we never look deep enough for the underlying truth. But we settle on something that sounds good, big government. I asked a person recently who said that he advocated small government, and I said, well, how small? And he looked at me and said, well, you know, stumbled around, and I said, well, look, what if we had a little community and we had one fireman? Would that be small enough? Well, probably too small. Well, and how small? I mean, when you get into the details of how small a government, people who claim that they advocate small government, want, they don't know what they're talking about. What's needed, of course, is a government that's adequate to take care of the problems that the society has. And size has nothing to do with it. Of course, if the people that are put in charge of that government are corrupt or incompetent, then the government isn't going to suffice, even if it's a small government. And I don't know why people can't get that through their heads.
Well, that's all very true, John. And we absolutely have bad government. People also need to understand that there simply is no difference whether Republicans are running it or Democrats are running it. We literally have a one-party state with two wings. And the disagreement on the big stuff, they're right in sync with each other.
You know, let me read you something I've got on my... I feel like I can find it real quick. I was reading some interviews from some people, were carried out in Afghanistan. People were interviewing ordinary Afghans, and I wrote this one down, but it's on my hard drive or somewhere, but see if I can't find it. Yeah, here it is. Report from Afghanistan. Report from Afghanistan. Let me see. People can finally, the person being interviewed said this, people can finally talk openly about what's gone wrong. They can criticize the government and warlords, point out corruption, but unfortunately nobody is listening. We never see anything change. And when I read that, I said to myself, sounds just like America. We have succeeded beyond our, you know, wildest dreams.
Well, it's true here. Government people complain all the time about what they don't like, but they literally do nothing about it. And the only thing they do, John, is you get a new election that comes out, and you throw out the bums and you elect new bums.
The thing is rigged, and you know I've written about that before. I mean, it's not. I think we discussed it the last time I was on. It's not so much who votes that matters as who you're allowed to vote for.
And who counts them as well, John? Who counts them?
Well, yeah, that you know we mentioned that too on that occasion. But nevertheless, you know, regardless of who counts, if you're not allowed to vote for anybody any good, you're not going to get anybody any good.
That's for sure. There are always some independent good candidates that show up on different races, but they get no exposure. So you've got a Green Party, and there's a guy, a Green Party Republican candidate in Illinois. He has some good ideas. I forget his name, frankly. He has some good ideas, but he'll get nothing in the election. He'll get a trickle of votes. So the good people are marginalized. Again, I mean, there's no coverage. Nobody knows anything about them because the way the system is structured is big money buys what they want. So the big money interests, mainly corporate, they contribute lavishly to the big candidates. They get all the play. And this is the way the system runs. We have politics by money. We have politics by electronic voting machines run by corporations that rig the machines to come out any way they want them to come out. We have a lovely democracy, John.
Yeah.
It's a lovely system, and I keep stressing that people need to get angry enough to want to do something, because we see it getting worse and worse all the time. I mean, I look back over the years and I say, it was never good. Go back to what they call the good decade in the 1950s. It wasn't so good in the 1950s when you strip it down and see exactly what was going on. But it just kept, we had to some extent a respite in the 60s in some respects. I mean, we had the civil rights movement. That was the respite. But we had Vietnam. We had horrible things going on in the 60s, and then it really went downhill from there. 70s were awful, and once Ronald Reagan came in, it really started descending at a faster pace, and once Bush came in, it accelerated much greater, and Obama has not missed a beat in continuing exactly what Bush was doing. With even more benefits, I love it when the Republicans call Obama a socialist. And I have to say, John, he wants to have it both ways. For sure, he's a socialist when it comes to handing out generous benefits to the big corporate interests, mainly Wall Street. But he's a free market capitalism for the rest of us, sink or swim on our own. But it's the same thing as George Bush.
This is probably politically inappropriate. But I recently told my son-in-law that Obama was Bush in blackface.
Oh, I think that's very appropriate.
You know, I mean, it's a travesty, and obviously, you know, he's one of, you know, I had many students like Obama. You know, I remember some of them vividly, very, very bright kids who somehow or other could never learn anything. Oh, they learned all the facts, and they could regurgitate them on examinations, and they were quick to learn, and they didn't have to study very hard, and they were good talkers. But they never really learned anything. And
well,
I've always puzzled about that. How is it that these bright kids never learn anything? And I think it's probably a facet of human nature in a culture where people start out having beliefs inculcated, and when these beliefs are inculcated to a certain degree, then anything that seems to conflict with those beliefs causes internal emotional discontent, and they reject it without ever thinking about it.
I think think it's also true that the way our political system is set up, nobody reaches a position of power, whether it's congressional committee heads, let alone the president, unless they're well vetted and chosen. So you've got a guy like Obama. He was picked out back in law school as a comer, and I guess people got hold of him and maybe not knowing exactly what he might end up doing, but groomed him as somebody that would move along and be a person of substance later on. And he was a smart guy. My God, Harvard Law School, for a black guy to get into Harvard Law School, that alone is an achievement. But he was a smart student. He made Harvard Law Review. And,
oh, yeah.
And they don't hand that out to anybody. He made it because I guess he earned it. He was a top student at a very, very tough school.
Yeah, but you know, there's something about that too. You know, look at the lawyers that we have on the Supreme Court. Now, they're all bright men too, but they come up with the grossest stupidities. Not only this court, but the court, you know, historically has issued egregious opinions that settled nothing and caused a lot of discontent.
Well, for sure, Dred Scott, internment of the Japanese, all this kind of stuff. We got a break, John. My favorite for the worst was 1876, I think, when corporations became persons.
Yeah.
Talk about it. And it was, well, we have to take a break. We'll come back. We'll be right back.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back, on with John Cozy, final segment. 1886, John, Santa Clara versus Southern Pacific Railroad. The decision had absolutely nothing to do with corporate personhood, but there was a court reporter in those days who held an important position, J. Bank Rob Davis. He wrote an addendum to their decision and granted corporate personhood. The court knew exactly what he was doing. I think it was a setup, and corporations have been people ever since with all the benefits but none of the responsibilities. That's my favorite.
Court has never really argued that. As a matter of fact, this case, and I don't remember the name of it right off the top of my head, in which the court actually told the people that they didn't want to hear arguments on it, that the case was settled, that the point was settled. You know, and you'll never be able to come up with a cogent argument for making corporations into persons. I mean, that's linguistically absurd, but they do it anyhow. The court is a real bugaboo for me, and I'm going to write something about it pretty soon again. But I'd like to change topic for a minute, since this is the last segment. People need to learn to listen very carefully to what is being said. Because what is being said is crafted very, very carefully to mislead. For instance, Obama, in his State of the Union, I think, said that he had restricted lobbyists from serving in his administration. And I think that's probably not quite true, but generally it's probably true. And I said to my wife, it's true. But what he didn't say was that he's forbidden the people in his administration from talking to lobbyists. So that restriction really has no effect, no benefit whatsoever. And it occurred to me that, you know, talking about lobbyists, it's very easy to get lobbyists out of the government of the United States, even if you can't pass a law to do it. All a party Congress has to do is say something like, we will not appoint anyone to a committee who has accepted contributions from an industry that the committee oversees. And that would put lobbyists out of business in no time. But there's an unwillingness to do this. expecting the government to get rid of corruption in this society, that is even with corporate corruption or any other kind of corruption in this society, it can be likened to expecting the rhino virus to eliminate the common cold. It ain't ever going to happen, guys. We're going to have to do it some other way.
It won't happen, and of course the lobbyists, John, represent the big corporate interests, and they're the ones that have so much to say about what goes on in this country, including war and peace.
Yeah, so that's true, but my point is that, you know, congressmen aren't obligated to listen to them. If they decide to listen to them, it's because they want to, not because they have to. And that has hardly ever been pointed out to anybody in this society.
Very true, John. I'd love to talk more about this and also more about the court. I'll look for all your new articles as they come out and get you back again soon to continue this. We'll just call this a continuing conversation, like a serial with a break in between. But always great stuff when you come on, John.
We'll call it the Ranger.
Oh, we're out of time. I've got a bit adieu, and my great thanks as always, John. And
oh, you're welcome, Stephen. I hope your listeners enjoyed it.
Oh, I know they do. I always get some good response, favorable comments, so I got to get you back soon. And join us again tomorrow. I love to say make this a daily habit. Please do.